Welcome back to Mechanical Dreams, the podcast where we untangle the hidden mechanics of machine learning and natural language processing. I am Professor Norris, and as always, I am joined by my favourite resident paper wrangler and doctoral student, Linda.
Hi, Professor. I am super excited about today's paper. It is a technical report that tackles one of the biggest headaches in serving large language models today, ultra-long context.
Ah, ultra-long context. The marketing departments absolutely love it, but the MLOps engineers lose sleep over it. What is the paper we are looking at?
It is called Flash Memory DeepSeek V4 Lightning Index Ultra-Long Context via Look-Ahead Sparse Attention. It was put together by a group of independent researchers along with folks from Tencent, HKUST, and Tsinghua University.
A hefty title for a hefty problem. For our audience of ML practitioners, we all know that extending context windows hits a fundamental physical limit, memory capacity, specifically the KV or key value cache.
Right. While modern sparse attention mechanisms have successfully reduced the computational flops per decoding step to near constant levels, the GPU memory footprint of the KV cache still scales linearly with sequence length.
Exactly. Every new token generated means caching its key and value vectors. When you get to hundreds of thousands of tokens, you're not bottlenecked by compute, you're just completely out of VRAM. I know recent foundation models like DeepSeek V4 and QM3.5 tried to slow this down with heavily compressed attention, or HCA.
They did, but as the authors of this report point out, it only mitigates the rate of memory growth. It does not eliminate the linear scaling bottleneck itself. To preserve fine-grained factual recall, those models still have to retain a significant portion of low compression or full attention layers. The memory still explodes eventually.
It is an inescapable tax, or at least we thought it was. Where does this flash memory paradigm come in?
It starts with a fascinating and honestly slightly infuriating empirical observation. The authors analyzed real-world inference logs and found a massive amount of resource waste. They discovered that over 90% of user requests with contexts longer than 64K tokens can be accurately resolved using only the last 8K tokens.
Wait, hold on, 90%? So you're telling me for 9 out of 10 ultra-long prompts, the model is fully loading and carrying tens of thousands of historical tokens in the GPU memory, and it doesn't even use them for the active decoding step?
Yep. The active decoding step is often completely independent of the historical context. That means an overwhelming majority of GPU memory is essentially being squandered on inactive context that contributes absolutely nothing to the current token prediction.
That's a staggering inefficiency, but let me put on my skeptical hat here for a moment. If 90% of the time we only need the last 8K tokens, why not just use standard sliding window attention? Just cap the context at 8K and throw the rest in the digital trash bin.
Because of that remaining 10%. If you just blindly discard history via a sliding window, the model completely fails on tasks that genuinely require global context synthesis. Things like multi-document reasoning, long-term memory recall, or deep summarization simply won't work if the model cannot see beyond its immediate 8K window.
Ah, there's the rub. We have a hard contradiction. We want to support deep global reasoning, which means keeping the data accessible, but we simply can't afford to pay the full GPU memory tax for local generation steps that don't actually need it.
Exactly. This hard contradiction is the root cause behind the prohibitive cost of long context serving. You have to provision hardware for the worst case scenario, even if the model only needs that full memory bandwidth a fraction of the time.
So we're staring down the memory wall, and 90% of our VRAM is just sitting there collecting dust. I assume these researchers didn't just write a paper to point out the problem. How do they propose we get out of this mess?
Well, they fundamentally rethink how the LLM accesses its memory. Instead of passively attending to all historical tokens just in case, they introduce a predictive paradigm to fetch only what is needed exactly when it is needed.
So to get around this memory wall we just talked about, the researchers propose look-ahead sparse attention, or LSA. It fundamentally upgrades the conventional compressed sparse attention layers found in DeepSeek V4.
Look-ahead, meaning it tries to anticipate what memory it is going to need before the model actually asks for it?
Exactly. Instead of hoarding all the fine-grained historical context in the active GPU memory, LSA parks the heavy KV chunks in the CPU's cold pool. Then it uses a neural memory indexer to proactively fetch only the critical chunks into the GPU.
Wait a minute. Moving data from the CPU to the GPU on the fly across the PCIe bus, that introduces latency. If they do that for every single token being generated, the overhead would absolutely kill the inference speed.
You are right, and that is exactly why they do not do it on every step. The indexer triggers periodically at a fixed decoding interval, which they denote as tau. In their optimal setup, tau is set to 64 steps.
Ah, clever. So every 64 tokens, the model pauses for a microsecond, evaluates its current hidden states, and predicts what specific blocks of historical memory it might need for the next 64 steps.
Precisely. It's a block-level look-ahead prediction. And they didn't have to redesign the whole foundation model to do this. LSA retains all the highly condensed, heavily compressed attention chunks, the ones with a 128:1 compression ratio. That guarantees the model always maintains a baseline awareness of the global context.
So it keeps a blurry, high-level picture of the whole document in VRAM at all times, but only pulls in the high-resolution, uncompressed details when the indexer flags them as relevant for the upcoming window. I like it. How does the indexer do the flagging?
The indexer mirrors the native Lightning indexer used in DeepSeek V4. It reuses the compressed indexer keys as dense representations of historical context. To get a little technical, they map the input hidden state into low-rank indexer queries across multiple attention heads using down and up projection matrices.
Ah, a classic bottleneck architecture to keep the parameter count low. Do they dynamically weight those heads?
They do. They project the hidden state to compute routing head weights, dynamically scaling the importance of each index ahead. But the most crucial architectural departure is that they swapped out the native rigid top K selector for a threshold-based mechanism with a sigmoid activation function.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. If you force a top K selection, the model is compelled to fetch, say, 50 chunks every time, even if only two of them are actually relevant. It would drag in 48 chunks of pure noise.
Exactly. The sigmoid function scales the indexer scores into a 0-1 range. For any query token, LSA fetches all preceding compressed KV entries whose look-ahead scores meet or exceed 0.5.
So if it's just generating a generic transition sentence, maybe zero chunks score above 0.5, and the GPU memory stays blissfully empty. But if it's tackling a dense summarization task, 100 chunks might cross the threshold and get pulled in.
Yes, it dynamically adapts to the complexity of the prompt. Once this safely critical subset is in the GPU memory, the native indexer takes over to calculate the fine-grained token-level matching scores, but it only scans within this restricted boundary instead of the full context.
Which means the heavy lifting, the actual flash infer or flash attention kernels, operate exclusively on a highly condensed hardware resident footprint. It's a brilliant tiered selection mechanism.
It really is elegant. This is starting to sound a bit like a sophisticated retrieval augmented generation setup, but built entirely internal to the attention mechanism.
It does. But wait, if they're essentially training an internal retriever to predict these look-ahead scores, how do they train it? Training a mechanism like this inside a 1,000 billion parameter model sounds like a computational nightmare.
That was their next huge hurdle, and their solution to that is probably my favorite part of the paper. They completely decoupled it. You left us on quite a cliffhanger, Linda. You mentioned they completely decoupled the training of this internal memory indexer. How on earth do you train a component for a 1,000 billion parameter model without actually loading the beast into your GPU?
It is pure engineering magic. They treated the memory indexer as a standard retrieval model and optimized it using metric learning. Because the historical compressed indexer keys are entirely pre-computed and strictly frozen during training, they did not need the main LLM at all.
Ah, I see. Since the target representations are frozen, they only had to train the query encoder. They're just optimizing those low-rank projection matrices we discussed earlier to map the current input hidden state to those fixed historical targets.
Exactly. They extracted all the historical representations, the target labels, and the layer-specific query hidden states offline. By physically isolating the optimization from the host LLM, they bypassed the massive memory overhead completely.
That is brilliant. What is the actual parameter footprint of the layers they're training then?
Less than 0.1% of the full model's parameter scale. Because the computational workload is so remarkably small, the entire memory indexer converges in just a single H20 GPU hour.
One single hour? I've had Python environment setups take longer than that. That completely changes the research cycle.
It really does. Leveraging a single cluster of 8 H20 GPUs, they executed approximately 500 distinct training runs within a single week. That allowed them to systematically map out the optimal architecture and training strategies, which would have been computationally prohibitive with traditional joint end-to-end distillation.
500 runs? That is some rigorous Pareto frontier optimization. So, with all that testing, what did they discover about where to place these indexes? I assume putting one on every single attention layer would be overkill.
Yes, absolutely overkill, and actually detrimental. They found that deploying indexers on the initial shallow layers yield exceptionally poor look-ahead performance. Those early representations mostly capture low-level token statistics, not the long-range semantic dependencies you need for global context.
Makes sense. Shallow layers are just figuring out syntax and basic grammar. But if you scale up and put indexes on too many deeper layers, you run into the opposite problem, right?
Right. They tested an 8-layer joint configuration spanning layers 6 through 20, and it triggered an excessively loose context recall mask. It ended up fetching up to 49% of the historical compressed chunks into the GPU memory, which completely defeats their primary goal of minimizing the memory tax.
The classic precision recall trade-off in dense retrieval rearing its head. So where's the sweet spot? Where do you get maximum context with minimum memory?
They established that placing independent memory indexers on exactly 3 intermediate layers delivers the ultimate sweet spot. Specifically, layers 10, 12, and 20.
Fascinating. And they route those using that OR-mode consensus framework we touched on, giving them a robust fallback protection boundary. Did they use standard fine-tuning tricks for the query encoder, like LoRa?
Surprisingly, no. They emphasize this is not PEFT-style LoRa fine-tuning. They leveraged the native low-rank query projection geometry of the DeepSeek V4 architecture. Instead of learning small perturbations on frozen weights, they set the internal projection dimension to 2048 and randomly initialized the indexer's projection matrices from scratch.
Random initialization? That's a bold choice. By not loading alignment-biased weights from a host checkpoint, they're forcing the dual encoder to learn unified representations from the ground up.
Exactly. And for the loss function, they moved away from standard binary cross-entropy and used a sample-weighted focal loss. Standard BCE was allowing easy negative samples to dominate the gradients.
Oh, focal loss. That's a classic trick from object detection. It's great to see it applied to attention routing. It downweights the well-classified samples so the optimizer concentrates on the hard boundary tokens.
Yes, they used a focusing parameter of 2, and instead of using a separate class balancing coefficient, they handled class imbalance jointly through a 3-to-1 negative sampling ratio and a per-sample weight scheduler. It kept the hyperparameter surface minimal.
Which is exactly what you want when you're managing a 500-run sweep. Keep the moving parts down to a minimum. I'm guessing they tried all the trendy retrieval tricks too, like strong negative mining.
They did, and they threw them all out. Popular tricks like pairwise to pointwise chaining, strong negative mining using LLM annotated semantic chunks, and weighted loss functions all proved to be redundant or even detrimental. Random negative sampling within the non-voted historical repository ended up being significantly more robust.
Sometimes the simplest methods prevail. The elegance of this decoupled setup is just astounding. But Linda, this all hinges on one massive dependency. You're training a supervised dual encoder, which means you need perfectly labeled data. How did they define the ground truth? You can't train an indexer if you don't know what the model actually should be looking at.
You left us with a critical question at the end of the last chapter, Linda. To train this ultra-efficient query encoder, you need to know exactly which historical chunks are actually useful and which are just noise. How did they label the data for the indexer?
It was actually a huge problem at first. The naive approach would be to look at the native Lightning indexer and just take the union of all top K entries it recalls across the future prediction window. But empirical analysis showed that caused massive label inflation.
Inflation? How bad are we talking?
Nearly 10,000 positive samples per token window. The root cause is that a rigid top K selector forces the model to recall a fixed number of preceding entries, no matter what. It drags in low probability noise from different attention layers and completely pollutes the ground truth dataset.
Ah, which is exactly what LSI is trying to avoid at inference time with its sigmoid threshold. So how did they clean up the training data before feeding it to the dual encoder?
They ran an offline data generation pass on the frozen DeepSeek V4 flash model and filtered the raw indexer logit scores through a three-step denoising pipeline called cross-layer majority voting.
Cross-layer majority voting? Walk me through the steps.
Step one is softmax normalization. They just convert the raw logit scores for all historical entries into a valid probability distribution.
Standard practice. Get everything on a 0 to 1 scale so the scores are comparable.
Right. Step two is top P thresholding. Instead of using a fixed top K count, they dynamically retain only high confidence entries using a nucleus threshold where P equals 0.6. Basically, an entry is selected by a layer if it falls within the minimum set of chunks that cumulatively make up the top 60% of the probability mass.
I see. So a highly focused layer might only pick 2 chunks to reach that 60%, while a more diffused layer might pick 20. It adapts to the attention density naturally.
Exactly. And finally, step three is the actual cross-layer majority voting. They aggregate these selection hits across all 21 compressed sparse attention layers of the model.
And what is the magic number to reach consensus? Does half the network need to agree?
Not quite half. An entry is officially recognized as a core active entry, or a golden entry, if it secures consensus backing from at least 3 independent layers.
3 out of 21? It sounds a bit low at first glance, but when you consider how specialized different attention layers are, if 3 separate layers independently agree a chunk is critical, it definitely is not just random background noise.
Precisely. Once they have these denoised golden entries, they take the union of them across the entire future temporal window of 64 steps. This establishes the positive ground truth label set for the dataset.
And how much did that reduce the label inflation?
It brought it down from roughly 10,000 noisy samples to a clean 100 to 1,000 highly relevant samples per window. By shifting from arbitrary top K lookups to this consensus-driven density estimation, they completely isolated the true contextual backbone of the sequences.
That is some pristine data curation. Garbage in, garbage out, as they say. They made sure to only feed their dual encoder the absolute gold standard. But now comes the real test. Does this pristine training data translate into actual benchmark performance?
So, Linda, after all that elegant engineering, the decoupled training and the consensus-driven golden data pipeline, let us get down to brass tacks. Does flash memory DeepSeek V4 actually hold up on the benchmarks?
It absolutely crushes them, Professor. they evaluated the model across three primary long context suites, Longbench V2, Long Mammy Val, and Ruler. Averaged across all tasks, their model consumes merely 13.5% of the baseline GPU memory footprint.
That is an 86.5% reduction in KV cache storage. Astonishing. But surely there is a performance hit. You cannot just drop 85% of your memory without losing some reasoning capability.
That is the craziest part. Not only is there no performance hit, but it actually improves overall accuracy by a 0.6 absolute margin over the standard DeepSeek V4 flash.
Wait, it uses a fraction of the memory and actually gets smarter. That sounds like a paradox.
It is that less is more phenomenon. LSA acts as an expert attention denoiser by filtering out thousands of irrelevant historical chunks that would otherwise clutter the attention dot products. It actually prevents factual hallucinations. For example, on the ultra-long 493K context setting of Longbench V2, it beats the baseline by 1.9% while running on a threadbare 10% memory budget.
Incredible. I assume they tested naive memory-saving baselines as a control, like just keeping the most recent tokens or randomly keeping 10% of the chunks.
They did, and those heuristic controls completely collapsed. A recency-only or random 10% strategy completely fails to synthesize global context. It proves that the memory indexer has genuinely mastered predictive temporal routing.
Okay, Linda, you know I'm a scientist at heart. I love a good victory lap, but I also love a rigorous reality check. What are the limitations? Where does the model break?
The authors are wonderfully transparent about this in section 3.3. First, there's the context-independent overhead. They hypothesized that for queries where history is irrelevant, the sigmoid gator would just output zeros, yielding a constant, flat memory footprint.
A perfectly adaptable system. Did it work?
Not quite. While accuracy stays at 100%, the pointwise sigmoid gator leaks a marginal background probability across massive sequences. When they scaled from 125K to 500K contexts, the physical chunk retention inflated by about 2.5 times because of false positive retrievals accumulating in massive distraction pools.
Ah, the long tail. Even a tiny false positive rate adds up when your sequence is 500,000 tokens long. What else?
The second major failure case is on the MRCR benchmark, which stands for multi-range context retrieval. Accuracy plummeted from a baseline of 76% down to a dismal 48%.
Ouch, that's a steep drop. Why did it struggle there when it succeeded on long bench?
MRCR requires aggressive, dense global memory dependency. The authors ran an Oracle simulation where they forced the indexer to load the absolute true golden chunks. Even when provided with 50% of the best possible chunks, accuracy still dropped by 2% compared to full context execution.
Interesting. It sounds like the decoupled architecture hit its structural limit. A standalone dual encoder with frozen keys and a shallow 64-step dot product similarity just lacks the multi-turn interaction capacity to untangle complex dense retrieval patterns.
Exactly. They note that incorporating elite interaction architecture, like Colbert-style token-level cross-matching, is probably necessary to fix this. Finally, they hit a hard length generalization ceiling.
Let me guess, it can't extrapolate to sequence lengths it hasn't seen during that rapid one-hour training phase.
Spot on. It safely generalizes up to exactly 2 times its training context length. If you train it on 128K and try to push to 1 million tokens, accuracy collapses into near-random sampling. The out-of-distribution positional embeddings totally distort the point-wise scoring.
Well, positional embeddings are notoriously finicky. Still, reaching 512K tokens with 90% memory savings is a monumental proof of concept. It's a shame the project was suspended due to those organizational realignments at Tencent.
It is, but releasing this technical report with all its verified checkpoints and transparent failure cases is a huge gift to the open source community. Flash memory in its current form is merely the first glimpse of what LSA can achieve for ultra-long context intelligence.
I completely agree. It lays a fantastic foundation for future researchers to build upon.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Flash Memory DeepSeek V4. Thank you, Linda, for bringing this excellent paper to the table, and thank you, our listeners, for joining us on Mechanical Dreams. Keep dreaming, keep building, and we'll catch you next week.